This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. How does a documentary change when the director becomes the subject? Filmmaker Daphne McWilliams found out in her directorial debut in A Perfect World. That documentary features interviews with men who grew up with a single mother. It also includes Daphne's own story of raising her son, Chase. Daphne got into documentary film after she worked on Spike Lee's project, Four Little Girls. She's the 2019 Susan Tift Fellow at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke, and Daphne McWilliams joins us in the studio now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
I am excited to be here, and thank you very much.
Welcome to North Carolina. You got started early as a child actor, right?
I did, about 4 or 5 years old.
Tell
I started
us about
doing
that.
Commercials.
Oh, commercials, all right. And were you bitten by the showbiz bug?
I don't know if I was bitten. It was just part of my life. My parents chose to get involved, and they raised me as an on-set child, and then my sisters and brothers got involved. I have 7 brothers and sisters.
Wow. Were they all one way? Because you also did modeling, right?
I did some modeling, but yes, I was the first to break into the business. And when our manager found out that there were more children and people had casting calls, they could say, we need a 13 or 15 or 20. We had it. We had,
you had one,
8 children
one of
to select. Yeah.
One of everything. And your dad really fond of making home movies, right?
Yes. He was a merchant seaman, and he purchased a Super 8 camera, I guess, when he was overseas, and he filmed his travels and then would make home movies film us when we came home.
Did that have any impact on you and your career, or that's just
later
something you had to smile for?
Later in life, I realized it did when I would see him cutting, splicing the film together in the dining room. And then he would show us home movies, set up the projector and the screen. I don't think I appreciated it at that point, but after working in the business and reflecting on my life, I realized that it had a big impact on me.
Yeah, that's like splicing actual tangible media.
Yes.
As we used to call it. In college, you majored in art, but then, was that where you ended up working on your first film production as well? Was that in college?
I started working on film after I graduated from college. I worked in advertising design, and at this agency, I was encouraged to study filmmaking, and I did a summer program at NYU, Sight and Sound, and that gave me more practical experience as a filmmaker. But I also grew up on set, so I was exposed to all the different roles as would happen on film. And actually, I was interested in sound at first.
Bless you. Bless you. Let me just say this now. I wish more filmmakers were interested in sound. That's all I'll say. That's great. You had an internship through the Black Filmmakers Foundation, and I wonder what kind of support that gave you, because we hear so much about lack of representation or, you know, insufficient representation in Hollywood these days. And I wonder what kind of support that was for you and what it meant for your career.
It was an incredible experience. Warrington Hudlin, who's the brother of Reggie Hudlin, created this program to give Black filmmakers an opportunity. I worked on the film Boomerang, so I'm dating myself. My role at that point was working in the art department, but my mentor and now dear friend Grace Blake recognized my skills more as a producer, production manager, and she introduced me to the Directors Guild of America. Not that I'm a member, but I understood more of that role, and she thought I had more of a knack to fill that position. So that from that point on, I started working on short films. Eventually, I produced a feature narrative for about $60,000. And that director was Sankey Lee, the brother of Spike Lee. And eventually, I received a phone call from Spike Lee to produce Four Little Girls.
Tell us about that phone call.
I was producing music videos at that time and received a call during a meeting from a man saying, "Hey, it's Spike Lee, and I'd like to meet with you." And I go, "Ha, ha, ha, yeah, right." I thought it was one of my brothers pranking me. He said, "Get a pen and paper and write this number down," which I did. I called back after a serious panic attack because I realized he gave me a 718 number, and I'm like, oh, Jesus, this might really be him. And it was.
You didn't blow him off because you could have. Like, if you thought it was your brother, you would have said something else.
Well, I really thought it was my brother, and I was in a meeting with someone, and I said, I thought it was my brother, but I think it was Spike Lee. And he said, call back right away.
So you did.
And so I was a little embarrassed, but it worked out.
But you had a suggestion to work on a Spike Lee film earlier, and you turned it down. Is that right? Because of the position that you would have had?
Well, I worked on a film, A Bronx Tale, and John Killick, who is one of Spike's producers, wanted to take me on to that film. But I also, after the experience on Boomerang, realized I was more interested in either being a production manager or a producer. When I shared with other friends and peers in the business that I had this offer to work on this film with Spike as a production secretary, they advised me that if you want to be a producer, don't take that because you might get stuck in that role. And in my head, I said, well, I would like to work with Spike Lee, but as a producer. I mean, he's a little bit cocky at the time, but...
Yeah, but that's an interesting choice because you might think, oh, I don't care. I get to rub elbows with Spike Lee. I'll work my way up. But you thought, your eyes were pretty clear at that moment.
It was clear, and I also was fortunate to have people that I could trust and give me good advice.
So talk about then dialing that 718 number the second time you had a chance and the position you had in that project for Little Girls, right?
Yes. What was exciting about working with Spike Lee was also Sam Pollard, who is a veteran documentary filmmaker, and I had known and heard of Sam, so that was just, you know, hitting the lottery twice. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really know the history or the story of the four girls in the bombing in Birmingham. Which says a lot about learning history of African Americans in school. I mean, I did know about the Fab Four, you know, King and Frederick Douglass and Malcolm X and, you know, those names. Mm. But it was truly eye-opening to know that these four girls going to church were murdered, and the experience of going into the homes of these families that survived this trauma was beyond emotional, and witnessing Spike as a filmmaker, and it was also his first documentary, you couldn't pay for that experience or education. It literally changed my life. That's for Alexa.
Well, and you were doing music videos, you said at the time, right? Which is kind of exciting work. Did you like that work while you were doing it?
I definitely loved and enjoyed working in music videos. It was extremely challenging, but we had a lot of money at the time. And it was also an arena for filmmakers of color to work. I was very selective with the work that I did, so I didn't get to produce many music videos because I didn't want to produce anything that was supporting violence or showing women in a way that didn't sit right with me.
Then was this it for you, Four Little Girls? Did you make a career change at that point?
Absolutely.
Switched to documentaries. What was it like for women of color? You talked about the fact that there were these opportunities, but in general, how was the field? Did you feel it was open to you as a woman of color?
Well, very optimistic in my life. I mean, I was born black, and I grew up on Staten Island, survived a lot of racial, was in the middle of a lot of racial tension. Mm. I mean, literally, I keep saying that word, chased by white boys in cars and that kind of experience. But it never stopped me or made me think twice about who I was. I am who I am. I would say maybe in the last 10 years, it's become more of an issue just in women, as women in general. But I personally feel as a black woman, I'm constantly at the bottom of the totem pole. So I've been definitely more fortunate than most. But I sometimes wonder where I would have been if I were maybe a white male or someone else. But I wouldn't change who I am today. I would still always come back is me. And, you know, at this point in my life, I think I've achieved enough that I can share my experiences, which is what's so exciting about being at Duke right now. And being a TIFF fellow.
Well, one of the ways you shared your experience was in your first documentary as a director, In a Perfect World. Tell us about that film.
That ended up, In a Perfect World really started out as my quest to understand how to be a better parent to my son Chase as a single parent. His relationship with his father had stopped, and I was very concerned. I was working quite a bit and on the road, and I didn't really know how to parent him. It was very, very challenging. It was probably a combination of he was a boy and his hormones were changing. So I set out to figure out how best to support him and maybe hopefully heal the relationship with him and his father. Shooting a little bit of research stuff, I shared that again with Sam Pollard, who was very positive about that and thought I should continue to create more, you know, shoot more interviews. Initially, my story, Chase's story, would not have been part of it. But that also grew out of filming, and I spoke with some people at HBO, and then I got support from my co-producers that my story and Chase's story should be included in the film. More so Chase's story, not even my story.
I want to talk to you more about that, the idea that, you know, what would it be like to include your story in a film that you're directing, but to give us a flavor of the film itself and the kind of interviews that you were doing, I want to play a clip from your film, In a Perfect World, and it features two of the men you interviewed, Craig and Kevin, and of course the question is, what would you tell your mother? You're talking about, this is a film about men raised by single mothers.
I want to tell my mother. I want to tell my mother that it's okay. You are doing a much better job than you think you are. And I want to tell that to all mothers, that you're doing a much better job than you think you are, because we're listening. He's listening. He acts like he isn't, but he's listening. Because I was that kid. I was your kid. Even if he stomps away, even if he whines.
Even in the middle of a fight, if we were just gonna choke each other, I'll compose myself, I'll hug her, kiss her on the cheek, and say, I love you.
That's a clip from the documentary In a Perfect World, and I'm talking with the film's director, Daphne McWilliams, who will be at the Center for Documentary Studies in Durham tonight to give a talk called Crossing the Fourth Wall, When the Filmmaker Becomes the Subject. And I'm talking to Daphne today on The State of Things. So talk about the reactions and, well, the interviews that you did. I mean, this is giving you an insight now into what other fathers are saying, men who have been raised by single mothers, because, of course, your big concern at this point is, am I good enough, right?
Still get a little choked up by that. The men who did show up and decided to share their stories, I'm forever grateful for that experience. They were amazing, and I really needed to learn, and I think they saw that, and they were very open, and they did help me. They helped me relax and realize that, you know, Chase is okay. And Craig in particular, his comment about they're always listening was, I think of that every day, and I use that. So I keep it short when I'm speaking to Chase, but I know that other mothers and other fathers have seen the film, and they've written to me and said how powerful it was for them, and that made it all worth exposing my child and our story.
Well, I can see, and our listeners can hear, the impact that this had on you, doing these interviews, certainly that moment, but there are others like it in the film, the impact that it would have on you as a mother. Now, what about as a filmmaker? You've got to put this thing together, and, you know, you've got these responsibilities as a filmmaker to tell the whole story. How did you navigate all of that?
Collaborating with an amazing team of people. So beginning with Sam Pollard, I mean, his experience, if you don't know who he is, please look him up. Also, a very dear friend in college, friend of mine, Mary Burns. She was also very supportive. She was actually my champion to help support me through the making of the film when I questioned whether or not this was a good idea to share our story in addition to the other men's story. And then James Cordianis, the editor, who in documentary filmmaking, the editor is key. He was just the master with taking all the footage, and you know, he wasn't emotionally attached to it, so he could set it aside. And JT Tagagi, who's the sound person, and I mentioned earlier, sound really is very key for me. She brought more than just her equipment and putting mics on people. Her experience and her compassion, it really brought a lot to the table. And, you know, aside from the photography, I booked all my interviews around her schedule because I thought if someone's opening up and sharing these stories, I cannot afford to not have it recorded in a certain way. And I don't think people see sound as the way I see it, but it's really is this connection, and it could be recorded in a way that it translates and transmits emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And the cinematographer, Henry, and I always screw up saying his last name, Adebajano, who also was the DP on I Am Not Your Negro, he also brought a compassion to the film as well, because he was raised by his father. His mother passed away when he was in his early teens. Mm. So everyone on the film could relate to the characters, and I think that that all is what ends up on the screen.
On the screen and in the speakers. Let's emphasize the sound
and
again.
The speakers.
Daphne McWilliams is a filmmaker and director of the documentary In a Perfect World. She's going to be speaking tonight at the Center for Documentary Studies in Durham. Her talk is called Crossing the Fourth Wall, When the Filmmaker Becomes the Subject. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Daphne, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The State of Things, a program that is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.